Well, welcome to Mental Health Radio, and take it from us, and that's our theme music from Joe Cocker called Respect Yourself. So I'm host Sheldon Brown, and we've got our technician, can't even say the word today, technician Declan Curran here as well. And Mental Health Radio, take it from us, is brought to you and funded by this new organisation called EMBA, EMBA Wellbeing Trust. Now, thanks go to my friend and mental health colleague, Gary Sutcliffe, for today's interview with our guest and mental health client, Malcolm King. Our guest is Malcolm King. Malcolm is an ambassador for recovery and a person with lived experience who isn't afraid to explore some options for a better life and improved mental well-being. And throughout this process, Malcolm had professional support from his peer support specialist, Gary. And even though Gary has retired from that role, he and Malcolm continue to meet as friends and mutual supports. Unfortunately, Gary is on, is on granddad duties today. Otherwise, he would have been here to support Malcolm. So, welcome, Malcolm, to Mental Health Radio, take it from us. I believe you have done an interview on television at one stage, but have you ever done an interview on radio?
No, I've never done an interview on radio. This is the first time.
Right, this is your first time.
A little bit daunting, but yes, we'll get through it.
I'm sure we will. What was your involvement with television?
I was on the Holmes program.
Oh. And talking about, what were you talking about on the program?
It was a program about men being stalked.
Staunch?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Are you a staunch man?
No, I was stalked. But
oh, stalked.
Yeah.
Stalked, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Stalked, okay. Well, maybe we won't address that quite at the moment.
No, no, that's a good idea. It was a long time ago, so.
Right.
Yeah.
Can we talk a little bit about your mental health? You were a panel beater for many, many years in your own business, weren't you?
Yeah, I had my own business for 39 years, yeah.
Right. And how was that work?
It was good. I enjoyed the people. I've always enjoyed people, especially the older people. I don't know. Working with older people, you find they had lots of stories to tell, especially ones that have been through war and things. So I enjoyed talking to my older customers while
right.
I was working.
Right. Well, you're talking to an older person here as a radio host, Malcolm. Yeah. So, and when you're talking to Gary, well, you're talking to somebody who's almost as old as I am. So, and Gary and I used to work together on wellness classes. I don't know whether he's ever told you that, has he?
No. I think he did mention it, yeah, a couple of days ago when he first asked me if I would be interested in coming on this program.
Right. Yeah. Well, can we talk a little bit about mental health? When did you first sort of identify that you had some mental health challenges?
It would be about 6 years ago now, I suppose, leading up to a situation where I actually overdosed. But prior to that, things started getting on top of me, and I think it was a build-up over many years of different situations. And
was this related to your work, or was it related to relationships maybe that you were in?
To relationships, and pressures of other things in life. Like I mentioned to my son getting cancer and his survival and his journey he's been on, you know, it's just quite incredible.
Can you tell us a little bit about how old was your son when he was first diagnosed with cancer?
He was 11 when he got diagnosed with cancer, and then we had chemo and we thought it went away, but it didn't. Within 6 months, it became aggressive.
Yeah.
And he had one of the biggest head operations in New Zealand at the time when he was 14. And he had a new jaw put in. He had no roof of the mouth for many years until he was 23. And then he had another major operation, which they replaced his jaw and he got a new roof of the mouth. And he's been through hell and back. He's probably, as I mentioned to you before, he's the strongest man I've ever met in my life. He's 34, but he's been through, it's a bit emotional, hell. Hell and back, and you know, he's a strong boy, man.
So what impact did all this have? It sounds as though this has continued for 20 odd years.
Yeah,
what impact did it have on you?
I find things like hospitals and going to hospitals hard work, and sometimes I wasn't there as often as I should have been going to the hospitals because they don't do it. I mean, I find it hard. So
What do you find hard about going to, I think we all find going to hospital to visit people hard.
I think it is that at that time over the years it was being afraid of seeing him in pain and thinking that I might lose him, you know. I think basically, and I was trying to operate a business as well and relationships, and so that was hard.
So you had to take time out to visit him and
and work, and there was other things going on, you know. A relationship with my wife was broken down, so. But we managed that and Hayden at the same time, so,
right.
Yeah.
But had you ever sort of had any experience of stress and pressure like it was, like you're describing?
No. It was like new, you know, like, I thought I could fix things. Most things, because of being a panel beater, you can fix things, you know, and I can sort things out. But when you get to the situation where you've got no control,
right,
you're in the hands of surgeons and the hospital, you know, we feel quite useless, really.
And coinciding with the illness of your son, it sounds as though your relationship, your marriage was breaking down as well.
Yeah. So it didn't really... That was hard for all parties, really, I think, you know.
Was that related to your son's illness and how much time?
No, not really. It was just that we sort of grew apart, my wife and I, so... And I... Shirley was a homebody and she was a really good mother, you know. But since I was working and having a business, I needed outside influence, which was football.
Right.
And we just...
So you were a referee?
No. I was playing football.
Right.
I played for 55 years.
Wow.
Yeah. I had to stop when I was 60. Then I started refereeing for the last 4 years. I have been.
So you're still refereeing?
Yeah.
You must have been one of the oldest football players in New Zealand.
No. He's a few older than me. I was just lucky that my build is stocky, that I didn't get too many injuries, you know.
What was your position on the football field?
I started off when I was younger as a striker, Then I went in my 30s, I was a midfielder. And then, and my lady is, you become fullback.
Right.
And then you go out the door.
Yeah. You never ended up as goalie.
Too short to be goalie.
Right.
No. I'm only 5'7", so I don't think I'd be a very good goalie.
But it sounds as though you had a real dedication to football.
Oh, yeah, I've played lots of sports. I used to be a sprinter when I was younger, so I ran for Auckland. But yeah, I did play Gaelic football.
Right. But you played football, soccer, for 55 years.
Yeah.
And then for the next four years.
Late, yeah, I've been refereeing, yeah.
And you're still refereeing?
Yeah, I'm still refereeing, yeah.
Right. Well, let's take a music break, and we'll come back and talk a little bit more to Malcolm. Sorry for my cough. I'm still getting over the flu, and it takes a long time to get this cough out of the way.
Yes, so you're sending my meters on here going all over the place.
Oh, is that right?
Like a hedgehog that's drunk.
Okay, well, Declan, yeah. I'm not sure what you've got for us today. But
I've got an interesting one here. I was just going to add in there just very quickly what Malcolm had mentioned in the hospital was you would feel very helpless was the word that I thought of, because you want to do something and it's outside of what you can do.
Yeah.
Anyway, today's track I've got for you is, well, it's quite interesting actually, because a lot of people think that the background music is from the O'Hara Smith singers, who were supposedly credited for the background vocals, but it was actually Bobby Whitlock and your fan, Eric Clapton.
Oh, nice.
Mm. In the US, this was released as its own single, and on the B-side was Apple Scruff's. That was on the B-side. That was in the US, and in the UK, it was released as a B-side. No.
Who's the musician that's bringing this to us?
It's George Harrison, and it's a track called What Is Life. But it's just interesting to see how the different countries had them on different sides.
Okay.
Yeah, right. Here we go. You're listening to Take It From Us, Mental Health Radio, broadcasting here every Tuesday from 12:30 to 1:30 on 104.6 Planet FM. And here is George Harrison with What Is Life.
I can't say You're with Take It From Us on 104.6 Planet FM.
And I'm Sheldon Brown, host of Mental Health Radio. We're talking to Malcolm King about his life, and Malcolm has given us a bit of an insight into his sport, particularly his football, and now he is refereeing at the AFL. Well, he's been refereeing for the last 4 years. But I am trying to encourage Malcolm just to give us a bit of an idea about his mental health. I mean, what did you experience, Malcolm, in terms of either depression or anxiety or...
Initially, I was trying to sort out problems, trying to suss out the problems, and I wasn't doing a very good job of it. And I wasn't sleeping. I had panic attacks, which were quite frequent. And you, at night time, you go to bed and you try to go to sleep, but you wake up and you'd be in cold sweats and...
Not a pleasant place to be.
No, it wasn't a pleasant place to be. And then I probably let it go on too long, and then situations with a relationship and things that were going on after that...
Who did you call to get support?
Well, and I didn't really call anybody. I thought I could fix it myself, but I didn't. And then I got to the point where I didn't think I could carry on, you know, and I just wanted to get out of here. So I took a whole lot of tablets and...
So those tablets were prescribed by a doctor?
Yeah, they were like antidepressants and things. I've been taking for quite a while, but I had an abundance of them.
And so you did seek help from a GP who gave you these pills?
Yeah, for a number of years I've been on like a sort of an antidepressant.
But in the initial stages, you went to a GP and he prescribed these medications.
Yeah.
And antidepressants and what, a sleeping medication?
Yeah, they are. And they were like tablets to slow my mind down, because I used to think a lot. And when you think a lot, you don't sleep. So I had to take tablets to make me sleep, and then antidepressants during the day.
Right. Were you still working?
Yeah, I was still working. But
how were you managing?
It was hard. Yeah. I found it a lot harder to talk to people, especially customers and things. I used to like talking to them, but then I became, the conversations got shorter, because I just didn't want to be around anybody. I wanted to work, and work wasn't satisfying for me either. So I think combination of all those sort of things, I got to the point where I just thought, oh, I want to get out of here, you know. I just had enough.
So you hadn't met Gary Sutcliffe at that stage?
No.
So you weren't getting any counselling support or therapy?
Nothing like that, no.
What suggestions did your wife have about how you were? Or did you hide it from her?
I wasn't married then.
Oh, I see.
No, I'd just broken up with my last partner anyway, so... I had no one really to talk to.
Right.
And I was probably embarrassed to talk to anybody, because I've been quite an independent person all my life, you know. Trying not to ask for help. I'd like to give help, but I didn't want to accept help.
Right.
But after I woke up in Middlemore Hospital, Waitakere Hospital.
After the overdose?
Yeah, yeah. And then, because I was under mental health then, and I was in the halfway house for about 3 days, but...
But you woke up in Waitakere Hospital, yeah, in the acute psychiatric unit there.
Well, I think so. I can't remember, to be honest.
But then you were transferred into a halfway house.
Yeah, for about a week, and then...
And what support did you have from... Did you have any support from family or friends or...?
Well, I... my ex-wife, I shifted in... I went into... well, it was a family home anyway, because we hadn't sold it. And I stayed there for about... Oh, to the point where I could leave again, you know.
Right.
So probably 6 months I was there.
So were you? Did you go back to work?
No.
How would you describe this time in your life?
Probably the worst time of my life. Yeah.
Right.
The most depressing time of my life. Lowest time of my life.
Right. But when did you call on help? I mean, who introduced you to help?
I was under the mental health, and then I got introduced to David Tagaya.
The psychiatrist.
Psychiatrist I saw initially.
Right.
And they were going through my background and going through from early age. And then I went, he put me on to...
Lila Hare.
Yeah. And...
And she's a specialist in mindfulness and...
Yeah. I'll tell you what, she was a big influence in my recovery.
Right.
I mean...
When did you first meet Gary then?
Oh, about a year later, I suppose. Yeah.
Right.
But she, from a person who never, ever... talked about things, I felt when I started talking to her, I just couldn't stop talking about things that had been suppressed for years and years and years, you know.
Right.
And for 3 sessions, she let me just talk and talk and talk, and then she put the reins on it and said, from that time on, really, I started my recovery, I think.
Right.
Because she was telling me things I could do and to box things in your mind and just don't concentrate on one thing at a time. Don't try and solve 2 or 3 or 4 things at once. And I started moving forward in my recovery.
Right. Was it a very confusing time for you?
Oh, it was a really, really, really confusing time. But it was elated too to get a lot of stuff out of my head and out of my system, really, by actually talking to someone, which I never, ever did.
Right, you just bottled everything up.
Yeah, all the time, you know. And I went to after a year of that, I went to my first wellness course, which Lila run. And I lasted about 20 minutes.
Right.
And I just, it was too
Full on,
because there's other people as well, and they're talking about their stories and that, right. And then they wanted to know my story, and I wasn't really up for it just then.
Right.
And then slowly, being under Lila, I progressed even more, and I was doing things to help myself as well, like, I started refereeing because I stopped playing
football.
Yeah, because I wasn't in a fit state really to associate with people or the team, you know.
Mm.
And
I guess physical exercise would have been too tough.
Yeah, mentally it would have been. Yeah, I've always been reasonably fit, but mentally to be around people was hard.
Mm.
I think Derek and Paul from Western Springs Football Club suggested I refereed some games at the club initially.
Mm.
So I sort of did that. And
so you had to talk to colleagues, friends at the football club that you were not well, or...?
They had an idea, but I never really talked to them too much about it. But I think everybody knew.
Mm.
And I didn't want to... I never talked too much about that sort of thing.
How do you feel about talking about it on radio today?
Something I thought I'd never ever do in my life, to be honest. I want to do it because if you're down and you get in the situation I got into, you find... You just have to ask one person with probably experience... and they can probably put you in the right track, you know.
It must have been, though, required a lot of courage for you to ask that first person for help.
More than probably you know, really. Okay. Yeah.
So in 40, 50 years, you had never... had to ask for help. You'd always been very independent, and
it's probably my upbringing. Really, my father was a sergeant major in the British Army, so, and my mother was a very strong woman, a Cockney Scottish woman. So, I had high morals, and I think you battle on. You right. know, that's what it's about, but.
So there was no role model where you could talk about more emotional things?
No. I had three brothers, but to be honest, a waste of time.
Really?
Not really. I had sort of bundled on by myself, but it's only in the last 5 years that I've, since my overdose virtually, that... I got to speak to people, and I'm not afraid to talk about mental health anymore.
Right.
I mean, it's such a big deal now, you know. I talk to people from, some people from football club and have some problems, and they get help. And especially people I've talked to in the bowling club.
Well, let's come back and talk about bowls, because bowls, it seems, has been a very positive sport for you and a positive therapy. We'll take another music break, Declan, and let's...
Well, this one here is by Mike Perry, and it's got a group, Hot Shade, and it features Renee Miller. It's called Lighthouse. It's by Mike Perry. You're listening to Take It From Us, Mental Health Radio, broadcasting to you right here on Planet FM 104.6. Every Tuesday from 12:30 to 1:30.
Why is it so hard? Oh, why? I just can't seem to let you go. Yeah, I know that I should probably move on, but I don't want to believe it's all gone. So I want you to know. Wherever you go.
Take It From Us on 104.6 Planet FM.
And I'm host of Mental Health Radio Take It From Us, Sheldon Brown, with technician Declan Curran, and we're talking today to Malcolm King about his mental health challenges. And Malcolm has been very courageous, I think, in sharing some of the things that happened to him, which clearly have been very confusing for him, and not experiences that you had had, Malcolm. But let's just talk a little bit about your first meeting with Gary Sutcliffe. Gary was working alongside Lila Hare at East Tamaki Healthcare, and you were getting care and support from Lila. And so how did you meet Gary?
Lila said, I would like you to meet someone who could support you, get through the rigours of what I was about to embark on, which was going to ACC about an event that happened in my life. And so Lila, after I finished the course, which I got through, which I felt was quite a big deal, really.
This was a wellness
course? Yeah, the wellness course, yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And she introduced me to Gary, and we talked for many hours of all different things, and
You had a lot of shared interests in sport.
Yeah, well, his father being Bert Sutcliffe.
Right.
The cricketer, and his sporting background and my sporting ground, we hit it off really well, you know. And I found Gary is a brilliant human being. He's supported me through my claim against ACC, and then we've got an ongoing claim with Human Rights Commission against a third party, which I probably can't say at this time anyway.
I think it's probably best that we don't go into any depth about that. But but you met Gary as a peer support specialist, and that means that he's a man with lived experience of mental health, and Gary has told his story on our radio show. So how did you feel about meeting somebody who understood where you were coming from?
Well, it makes you feel at ease. Because he's been there, and he's done what the things I've done, you know. Most of us, you get in the situation I got into and the situation Gary got into, are very similar, you know. You go down a path that, which is...
where you lose control.
Yeah, you lose control, yeah. And then you slowly... meet people or you get support from people and you start going back up the road again, you know. And Gary,
would it be fair to say that this is the first time that you'd had to ask for support in, say, 55, 58 years?
Yeah.
So it must have been really challenging for you to ask for that support.
Yeah. It was. I mean, initially, it was quite... I felt quite down about having to ask about for support. But once you got the support and you understand the problems that you were going through and you understand the people who are helping you have been there and done that, and you can understand how they got their wellness, you know. That's how Gary and I, we've talked about it on, you know, numerous occasions. But we, just meeting Gary and having a coffee with him, it's good because you talk about things that probably you don't talk with other people.
Mm. What sort of things... are you referring to more emotional things, sports interests?
Yeah, but other things relating to mental health, or if I've had a challenge at some stage, you know, and he can say, "Oh, you know, just remember your breathing, Malcolm." You know,
right? So he gives you a little reminder about those strategies which are important to keep you well.
Yeah, well, it is. And it's one thing, it's... I got out of wellness and everything, really, is the breathing. Mm. If you get to a situation, if you just breathe, you calm yourself down and you can think more clearly, which I found... In the weekend, I felt I used that strategy when I was in a bowling competition, and something I never learnt to do prior to that, prior to my depression and that.
Mm. Do you find the breathing helps with your sleep?
To a certain extent. I've never been a great sleeper anyway, but... It slows your mind down.
Mm.
Whatever slows your mind down. But I'm one of those people that think a lot, you know. So it does. I still take tablets to sort of calm me down so I can go to sleep.
Yeah. Right. But. Well, the last time I had to talk to a psychologist, she encouraged me to do 15 minutes of breathing before I went to sleep, so as soon as I got into bed, and when I wake up, do another 15 minutes of deep breathing. And I find that is a remarkable way of maintaining calmness and managing anxiety. Yeah. Shall we take another music break, Declan, and then we'll come and talk a bit more about your new interest in lawn bowls?
Yeah. No worries.
Great.
Cool. Well, you probably won't have heard this one for a little while. It's called Love Really Hurts Without You. It's by Billy Ocean. and you're listening to Take It From Us Mental Health Radio, broadcasting here every Tuesday from 12:30 to 1:30 on 104.6 Planet FM.
Take It From Us on 104.6 Planet FM.
And I'm host Sheldon Brown, and we're talking today to Malcolm King, who, really got through the first 50 to 60 years of his life without really having to open up and ask for help. And your message, what's your clear message to people, Malcolm, today?
Well, I got through 60 years, but I'd probably, if I had asked a lot sooner in those 60 years, I probably wouldn't have got to the situation I got to. And being maybe a male, I'm not sure, but we don't ask for help. And for God's sake, you know, if you get to a situation where you're really, really down, it's not embarrassing to ask for help, just ask for help, you know. You feel so much better because you've got someone, if they can't give you help, they probably might be able to suggest you to go and get some help. Mm-hmm. As soon as you get help, you feel you've got a bit of a crutch to get...
You've got an anchor.
Yeah, where you can get back on your feet again, you know?
Right. If you had known or been prepared to ask for help, then I guess there wouldn't have been an overdose and you wouldn't have woken up in Waitakere Hospital and then had this long process of getting back on your feet.
No, because I would have understood a lot of things that were going on, and I would have got the help to understand those things. Mm. And I didn't get the help, so that was my fault because I didn't ask for it. But, you know, for God's sake, if you're feeling down, if you're feel that way I was, you know, ask for help, you know, because it's there, you know.
where did you, I mean, I guess you got into the system by having your overdose and then people recognised that you needed help. But were the later stages where you needed to independently ask for help and support?
Yeah. I mean, that's good with having Gary as a support. We're mates now, but you bounce off him, and he's quite knowledgeable. And I'm lucky that way. I've got Gary, and it helps me immensely. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, the other thing that I understand has helped you greatly is that you've taken up a new sport. What's that?
Yeah, last 3 years I've been playing outdoor bowls, and once again, it's probably one of the best things I've ever done. Initially, Peter Pushman, a good friend of mine, he said to me, like I was moping around a bit, and he said, "Why don't you go and have a game, a round of bowls?" And he said it helped him immensely through his a breakup he was going through, and he said it's a respite for you for like 4 hours. You're
focusing on something else
instead of your problem,
right?
So I said, "Oh, okay," and. First time I went, I said, "Oh, it's okay." And the second time, it was all right, and I seemed to be getting better. And then I started meeting people, and they encouraged me. They said, "Oh, there's a coaching clinic you can go to. This is at Blockhouse Bay Bowls." And from then on, I've gone leaps and bounds, and...
Well, you played in a final, I think. Was it this last weekend?
1-5, on Saturday. Yeah.
Right. So it's the... If you're a new member, I understand that you're in a junior grade.
Yeah, 1-5.
And you've been bowling for 1-5 years.
Yeah.
And you were a finalist in that.
I won it, actually.
Oh, you won it? Wow.
It's good
as a team or as a single bowler?
Yeah, it was singles, but then again, on that day, I had a lot of support from probably 10, 15 bowlers from Blackhouse Bay and a couple of from other clubs.
Right.
And it's like a community bowls. It's totally different than any other sport I've played. People want to help you. People want to encourage you. The biggest thing I've talking to other bowlers is bowls has helped them to communicate to and it's helped them instead of sitting in a rest home or whatever a retirement village, they come and play bowls and they interact with people. It's good for their health.
Mm-hmm.
It's good mentally. It's good because it stimulates their brains and they're challenging themselves. And they're good people. And they've all had... Some of them have always had some mental health problems as well, and they find bowling is
relaxing.
And relaxing. And it's therapeutic.
Not too competitive?
No, well, it is. it is competitive, but it's a different competitive than playing, say, rugby or soccer. It's you still want to win. Everybody wants to win.
Yeah.
But there's lots of joking and mucking around, but...
Yeah. So what's it really meant for you? What are the important things about bowls for you?
Well, for me personally, it got me out of the situation of moping around and, I was on the road to recovery, but it got me back to the person I was probably... 10, 12 years ago, something. Mm. I'm back to where I'm a happy-go-lucky type person, what I used to be. I wouldn't be doing this.
This would be too scary?
Oh, yeah. I wouldn't even entertain the idea. I mean...
So it sounds as though...
The thing is, like, Bowls is open to all ages, fat, skinny, wide, whatever, old,
right,
young. It's there for, and they all can be competitive. They don't have to be, you can be any size, any age.
Yeah.
And it's, I don't know, I've got a friend of mine who I bowl with, he's an ex-psychologist, actually. And he's at, he's in a village, and him coming and bowling is good for him as well, you know, because instead of staying in your room, you know, stay in the room. Even though they live in a village, they still stay in their room. If they can get them out, you know,
yeah,
that's what it's about.
But for your own experience, I mean, I think you said you were moping around before you started playing
golf. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, yeah, I was moping around. I had no focus on a lot. I've been starting refereeing, but that was only on Saturdays. I had all the rest of the week sort of.
Right.
And I was just trying to find things to do, really. But after Peter got me into that, and I got to meet people, my personality came back.
Right.
My well-being came back.
Yeah.
And
so what's your recommendation about bowls?
Oh, it's not an old fogey type thing. My recommendation is that if you're in a situation where you're a bit down or whatever, go to a bowling club. They welcome with only open arms.
Yeah.
There's plenty of people there who will coach you. And they all want members.
Right.
All the clubs want members.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. I mean, you're a person that likes to help others, I think, Malcolm.
I enjoy it because it gives you a sense of satisfaction, you know. Oh, a sense of satisfaction, yeah.
Right. So do you find that you get out of yourself if you're thinking about other people and doing things for other people?
Yeah, makes me feel good.
Mm.
And if you can do things that make you feel good, do it, you know. And they make me feel good.
One of the things that you did do was you spend time up at Starship Hospital, don't you? And you've done something special up there.
Oh, I wouldn't say special, but I built a lolly vending machine. I did it because when I used to go up there see Hayden, when he first went up there, the kids were running around, and if you gave. So I thought, well, I'll take a jar up there and with lollipops, and if they've been good, they can give them a lollipop to calm, stop them running around, because this is not the patients, it's the patient's siblings.
Family and yeah. That sort of thing, yeah.
So that started off as a jar, but that didn't last very long because it's empty within like 3 days.
All right.
So I end up making this
lolly vending machine.
Machine that you wind up and it comes out, and right. I did that I think 8 years ago, and I go up every 2 to 3 weeks and fill it up. But
right.
That's something I enjoy, as I said, because I see people that I admire.
Yeah.
And I don't think nurses get enough money.
So you're giving of your time, you're thinking of other people. How does that help your own mental health?
Oh, well, you get enjoyment because you're doing something for somebody. But I get not only that, I get the enjoyment of seeing other people enjoying.
Right, right.
And
well, your face is lit up thinking about that voluntary work that you do and helping other people. And that's lovely to see.
Yeah, because it's like, I don't know, people, if you give a present to somebody, you get more enjoyment, I think, giving the present than accepting the present.
Right.
That's what it's about. I get more enjoyment giving the present than I do accepting the present.
Mm.
That's how I sort of feel. I think it's My mother was like that as well.
So. Right. So, but your exposure to hospital, I guess, also underlines that maybe your issues and your problems and challenges are nowhere near as great as some of the people you see in hospital.
Oh, no way. Yeah, you know, I go up there and I see a lot of the child cancer kids, you know, and they're such a strong... Children are strong, you know. My son was strong. Kids are fighters, you know, and I can see that.
Survivors.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, my son's a survivor, you know, and...
You must be very proud.
Oh, yeah, I am. I mean, I'm proud of how he fought. I mean, to be honest, I could never ever go through what he went through.
Right.
I haven't got the stamina, put it that way. But there's lots of people like that.
Right. But one of, I think, the important messages is that when it comes to mental health, fighting our mental health is not necessarily helpful. I think we have to accept our mental health, be patient with it, give it time. Mm. Would that be the way you feel?
Yeah, definitely, because it's not a one-fix situation. It takes... It took a long time to get into the situation I did, and it's taken a long time to get out of the situation
right.
I was in.
Well, I reckon for every hour of anxiety, you need 2 hours of relaxation and therapy.
Right.
Well, we better leave it there, Declan. Thank you, Malcolm, for being on Take It From Us, and we're pretty much out of here.
Yeah, we pretty much have a good week, everybody. I hope you get somewhere nice and dry, and we will talk to you this time, same place, next week. Have a good one.